And so stay tuned. Later on, we're going to be having an interview with Syrup Trap, an interview with Ski and Board, and then Grace Your Ears with the John and Ryan Sleepover Show, which is a bit of a throwback from a couple years ago. So thanks so much for listening, and here we are.
The cast for 24 hours of student power. My name's Eric, and I'm here with Robert Gorwa.
Hello.
Of the JPS, Journal of Political Studies, and the Envoy project, which he started himself. Mm. Which one of these two projects do you want to talk about first?
Well, I mean, we can start with the JPS since you're also involved with that.
That's true. We're both editors, senior editors, seasoned veterans.
Seasoned veterans of UBC undergraduate journal life.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, what do you want to talk about? Shall we talk about...
Well, what is the journal?
What is the Journal of Political Studies? I mean, I don't know if I'm the best qualified to be speaking about this, but...
It's okay. I asked Parmita. She didn't want to do it.
Okay.
Parmita's the editor-in-chief.
Well, essentially, yeah, the Journal of Political Studies is a peer and faculty-reviewed publication, which publishes a variety of pieces, mainly essentially essays, which students have written every year on a variety of different topics, from comparative politics to public policy, to political theory, to international relations. So,
yeah, and what we do as editors is we get a bunch of submissions from people from all around, not only from political science department. So if you're interested, if you're listening and interested in submitting something to the journal, check us out online, UBCJPS, I think.
Yeah.
And you can submit, so we get, you know, tens to hundreds of submissions.
Yeah.
And
To thousands,
and they're split up in groups to read, and then we read all of them. We discuss them in our groups, which ones we like, why not, and then, we go on to more and more rounds like that until we do one-on-one editing.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, that's a good way to start our little discussion here, because I think actually one of the main reasons that I ended up starting the Envoy, which is this other project that myself and some of my fellow comrades from the JPS of last year have been working on. And I mean, it was largely because as much as I love the JPS and the people that was on it, I was very aware of its inherent limitations, right, which are neither good nor bad, but they're just kind of a result of the way that the journal, the academic peer review process works. So, I mean, we were limited by a variety of factors. For one, I mean, it's just a huge time frame, right? We have to go out, solicit submissions. We've started doing that already. We do it in November or whatever. And then we don't publish the journal until April. So, obviously, you're going to have an issue with topicality, right? It's hard to have stuff, which happens now, and then no one's really talking about 8 months from now, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's hard to predict that.
Yeah, people also submit papers that they've written like a year or two ago.
Exactly. So topicality was a thing. Another thing was just in the sheer content and also the quantity of submissions that we could take. I figured, listen, like, why not be pumping out these things constantly, right? And we did get a lot of submissions, and just by virtue of what we essentially had to cull the herd down to 8 pieces, I think, that JPS published. So the fact that so many people were sending us stuff told me essentially that lots of people were interested in getting this stuff published. And I've talked to a couple students who essentially said, listen, like, I really like writing, and I would like kind of more opportunities to do that outside of a strictly academic setting, right? Because honestly, no matter how much you love your class or whatever, no one really loves writing papers that much.
No, especially because, I mean, I feel like 95% of the student body writes them under extreme stress.
Yeah.
And it's just at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not for pleasure.
Right. So I was reading one of our lovely campus publications, either the UBC or the Talon, and I remember they have these little tagging systems where they tag all their posts. And I remember seeing one which said World, and I clicked on it, and there wasn't anything there. So I was like, surely there's a niche, right? Surely I don't know, there needs to be some kind of avenue for students to also provide this kind of commentary on current events. I thought it'd be a cool exercise. Students could write op-eds or pieces which are shorter, basically about stuff that was interesting to them. So, I mean, it all came down to one question, and I mean, I feel slightly bad about saying this, right? But while the JPS is great, and like we publish good stuff, and it's a great experience for people that are involved, at the end of the day, it's only really a great experience for the people who are involved. So either
no, you didn't.
I just said that. Well, because
people, CITR maintaining its controversial status 75 years on.
Well, because at the end of the day, right, you get to, I don't know, either get one of your works published, which is great and looks great on your resume, or you get to be an editor where you get to meet other people who are interesting, you get to learn a bit more about the editing process, and you get to also put that on your resume. So it's a largely self-serving thing, let's be real. But of course, like, those opportunities are limited. And then also the readability of it is highly limited, and publishing it in primarily a print format. I mean, I edited the JPS, the journal last year, and I haven't read it cover to cover.
Yeah, I feel like that's part of part of the reason for the JPS is basically to give, I think, undergraduate students the opportunity, right, to go through that process and be published.
Yeah.
And that definitely has its merits.
Yeah. As well as the limitations.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's a very academic format.
Yeah.
But as you've been saying, you know, and in the end of the day, you really have like 35 people who get a chance to benefit from this.
Exactly. So,
and a lot of the papers that are submitted, right, are really good papers that don't make it, or they're super smart people who maybe just you know, didn't feel like submitting a paper, right?
Right. And I mean, it's definitely a necessary process, because at the end of the day, basically publishing opportunities are super limited, right? Unless you're willing to write for the UBC or something, or the Talon, for example, which by virtue of their mandate are limited to covering essentially local issues or campus politics, right? If you're interested in, for example, maybe, I don't know, you wrote a paper about gender-based violence in Nigeria and Boko Haram, right? And you think that's really interesting and you've been doing a lot of research on it. Why not write a short op-ed, 600 to 1,000 words, right? Talking about stuff which basically it came down to one thing, whereas like, how do you get people to read this stuff? And I essentially figured that friends, basically people would read stuff that their friends wrote. And that's how our growth has been organically. We started this Envoy, just putting up pieces every couple of days. And pretty much everything has been word of mouth, where it's just been people that I know, such as Eric, who I've been harassing to write for us for a little for quite some time. Right? So it's been people I know, or my six other editors who pretty much all of were either on the JPS last year or on the JPS this year. So it's been essentially natural growth through people that I know or they know. And then that's kind of what we've been doing, is people, like, everyone kind of expands slowly with their friend groups reading stuff they read, and then maybe sending stuff in. So far it's been pretty good. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but we've published probably close to 30 pieces.
Wow.
Which, if you think about, we've been around for, what, 2.5 months?
Yeah, that's great.
And we've already published, I mean, basically, like, 10 times more or 6 or 7 times more stuff than a journal can, just by virtue of what it is.
And how's the experience been with the Envoy?
I mean, it's been interesting. For one thing that has been difficult, and it's been a great learning experience, is that none of us were particularly well-versed in writing op-eds, right?
Yeah.
Like, I read a ton of op-eds every day, probably at least 5. And so did like the other editors, but at the end of the day, I mean, it was not just
one thing to read and one thing to write.
Exactly. And it wasn't just the authors that were learning about this non-academic writing style, but us too, right? So it's been really interesting. I mean, trying to make sure that the stuff that we put up is accessible. So part of the idea was that it wouldn't be super, super academic or have concepts where poli-sci students or IR students would be the only ones that would understand it.
Yeah.
So the idea was to cut down on jargon and make the writing as clear as possible.
Yeah, make it accessible.
So, I mean, it's been tough. Like, a couple times what we've tried to do is actually take papers or the ideas of a paper. One of our editors, James, wrote a really interesting piece, which at its core was like an incredibly academic concept. It was called Fukuyama's Requiem. And it was essentially talking about the future of war and whether the West is kind of structurally able to basically cope with this future of intrastate kind of insurgencies and lower level like rebellion rather than overt interstate conflict.
Yeah.
So anyway, like we tried to convert that into an op-ed and spent so much time on it, and it was so incredibly difficult to do and like almost a huge waste of time in a sense, just because it's very
hard. Did you end up publishing it?
We ended up making it work, but it was it was cut down from like, I don't know how many, probably like 4,000 or 5,000 words into like 600 words, and then had been rewritten like multiple times. Anyway, it was a good article. It was really interesting, but I mean, that just shows you that like I love James, and it's one thing that I think is something that we've all kind of faced, where we've gotten used to that kind of academic writing style, right?
And yeah, totally.
That's something that I think is important for people to learn, especially since, I mean, the vast majority of us aren't going to be going into academic fields afterwards.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be writing, you know, 20-page research papers on stuff. It's more likely that you'll be trying to write concise, essentially opinionated, well-written executive summaries or policy papers or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's just good to be able to write. I feel, you know, like writing outside of school, no matter what, the academic style that you need to learn in school ends up, you know, infiltrating into my writing. Like, no matter what. I wrote, like, a thing for, I think, like, the CITR newsletter. Okay. You know, and it's like, how's the first 2 months been? And I was like, furthermore, in the context of our
first
transition, and it's just like, oh, you know? I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's fine, and it's good to know how to write that way.
Mm.
But to have, you know, a medium where you can learn, you know, really how to be clear and concise and accessible is important.
Exactly. And I mean, I figured, like, I don't know, it's a cool opportunity, too, to get your stuff online. Like, it's a really nice format. Our site is super sexy. and I think, I mean, one of the broader goals was to kind of not only allow for that, but also to allow students to write about stuff which either wasn't really being covered or which was kind of niche, or bring in their own kind of personal perspectives into various issues. So we've had a couple interviews up there. We've been incorporating slightly more journalistic content, getting some interviews and stuff.
That's cool.
Because it's been part of our kind of overriding question, which at the end of the day is like, obviously we want everything that we put out to be as good as possible, right? We have pretty high standards just by virtue of who's working on the editing board.
Yeah.
So obviously every student op-ed isn't going to be phenomenal, right? Because we're undergrad students, right? What can you expect? And it's been this kind of question of originality where when you have, I don't know, when you have all these publications, I don't know, New York Times, Foreign Policy, Atlantic, etc., who essentially have teams of people.
I'm just kidding.
You know, the titans of our time. All these publications have people who like not only are paid to do this kind of thing all the time, but are smarter and more experienced, essentially.
Well, yeah, I'd say more experienced. I mean, not necessarily smarter. Like, most likely, but, you know. We got to give ourselves some credit here.
Of course. The point being is that how do we essentially make this content unique, right? You don't want to, like, how do we expand, I don't know, make this conversation more interesting, because you don't necessarily do that, even if you're providing like student opportunities to get published, if we're just regurgitating essentially the same arguments which are on today's foreign policy or whatever.
Yeah.
So one of the ways we've been trying to do that is incorporate more personal accounts, more personal narratives, more interviews, things where people can apply their own kind of, I don't know, their own perspective and their own experience. So after like the Paris attacks, we had French students from Paris writing about it, right? We had an interview with a Parisian student who was there.
who was on the GIA last year.
Exactly, Agathe. Yeah. So
the Journal of International Affairs.
Yeah, so I mean I'm pretty excited.
If I'm listening to this and I go, wow, this guy Robert sounds pretty cool. Well, so does his thing.
He has a stupid voice.
Yeah, the other guy with the stupid voice. I mean, he's got nothing going for him.
We were just talking about how, because I have a show on CITR as well.
Oh, plug it.
Monday nights, the Soul Ship Enterprise playing funk, R&B, jazz.
What soul, time?
6 p.m.
Nice.
So, I mean, one of the truly crippling realizations that I had after joining up with CITR and starting a show was just how stupid my voice sounds recorded.
However, I had the same feeling, but one of the empowering things is like we are here talking on the radio.
And there's no one there to stop us.
Exactly. Like people will hear us, hopefully, and they're going to think, wow, what a stupid voice. But then they'll probably go, hey, you know that Envoy thing sounds pretty cool. I might apply to the JPS. That's great. I mean, like, you know, realistically, I kind of think now radio has opened up room for stupid voices.
Mm.
You know, like before it was all the sort of like, hello, tonight on the radio, you know,
the radio voices.
The radio voices. But now, I mean, you got like Ira Glass is the biggest star. And, you know, realistically, he does not have a great voice to listen to. You know, no knocks on Ira. Yeah. He's great.
Great guy.
Yeah. Anyways, so the Envoys online, where do you find it online?
www.theenvoy.ca. It's a little awkward because it's two E's in a row, so it's like Theenvoy. Theenvoy.ca.
Gotcha.
But yeah, we're also on Facebook stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
are you on Twitter?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
We are on Twitter. I think our handle is at EnvoyCA or something like that. I mean, it's interesting just because our demographic is obviously the campus demographic, and I think most students don't actually use Twitter. So we've been trying to get the Twitter.
Man. I'm kidding. I gave up on that 2 years ago.
So I mean, we've got a little Twitter action going. It's interesting. Like who are following us, all like 25 of them are like the Leo Institute at like the CBC and like,
well, that's pretty cool,
which is cool. So it's big names. You never know, man. You write for the
Envoy.
You could get retweeted. You could potentially get your stuff seen. I mean, that is the beauty of the internet these days. Who knows? Like,
who knows what'll go viral?
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, we've got big plans for next semester. Essentially, the idea is to kind of take a break over the Christmas holidays, break, and then just try to stockpile as much stuff as we can and just come in swinging in January.
Beautiful.
So yeah, if you have any ideas, don't hesitate to contact me or send in some stuff. It's at submissions@theenvoy.ca. That's right.
And if you are interested in the Journal of Political Studies,
it's probably too late. No, it's not. To submit.
No, you can submit until December 23rd.
Of course. Beautiful.
So you've got plenty of time.
And that means you've got time to finish up these last papers.
Yeah, and then send them right in.
Yeah. I mean, even if you get destroyed, if your self-confidence is shattered by a particularly malevolent TA, you can always redeem yourself by sending it to the JPS and possibly getting it published.
There you go. So, you know, UBC JPS, Google it, check it out. Thank you, Rob. We are here again for the 24 Hours of Student Power special programming here at CITR 101.9 FM. I'm here with Robert Gorwa, senior editor for the Journal of Political Studies here at UBC and founder and editor-in-chief. Are you editor-in-chief?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Founder and editor-in-chief of The Envoy, UBC's, I'd say, newest publication for students. So check it out at theenvoy.ca.
Yes, sir.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam,